introduction and then we'll come in.
Jesus has promised he's coming soon, and never again must we part. But to be ready to hear his call, I must live with all of my heart. I'll live with all of my heart today. I'll give him my truest, my best. I'll live with all of my heart today, and in health and happiness rest.
What do you think, folks? Can you do that?
All right,
let's
try
it with you.
Let's sing with us.
You want to do it with us now? Okay.
Jesus has promised he's coming soon, and never again must we part. But to be ready to hear his call, I must live with all of my heart. I'll live with all of my heart today. I'll give him my truest, my best. I'll live with all of my heart today, and in health and happiness rest.
Amen. You guys sound great.
I think they did great. What do you think, Chloe?
And we're only going to get better.
Remember this, because we're going to be doing this every time our brother speaks.
So that's twice a day, isn't it? In the morning and in the evening? Mm-hmm. All right, yeah.
I'm in India, and at the end of a series where we had some 1,000 millionaires enrolled in the CHIP program, all looking for health, one of the richest men in India comes to me and he says, I'm 45 years of age, I'm a billionaire, I had my heart repaired in America at a bypass surgery. After 4 years, it was clogged up again. I have pain again. And I begin to realize that the only true wealth that I have is my health. He said, whenever you go somewhere, tell the people, it's not the pursuit of material blessings, but it's the pursuit of aiming for living the very best life, and the best life has to be centered on the foundation of having good health, because once health is gone, everything else no longer matters. Now, you know this. I see some of your silvery hair. We learn these things oftentimes too late, don't we? When I talk to young people that are in their 20s, goes in, goes out, because at that age, they think they're immortal. Let me have my cigarettes, let me have my whatever I want to do, it's fine. They have no idea. But once you begin to turn silvery, you have this distinguished look. You begin to realize that life is very precious. You begin to realize you want to see those grandkids growing up. You want to see them go to college. Maybe you even see them walking down the aisle. Life is precious. But many of us discover it almost too late. Now, I have some good news for you that I will share with you tomorrow. In some of these big studies, they found that when they turn heart disease around, when they helped the arteries to be opening up again, they found that the oldest participant in the study had the biggest benefits. So I hope that's good news for you. It means it's never too late. It's rarely too late. You can do what you want to accomplish if you put your heart and soul in it. If you just play around with some ideas that we talk about today, don't come back tomorrow. It's just a waste of time. If you really want to be healthy, you have to embrace the concepts that have gotten away from us so far, particularly with the stresses that we have in life, the lack of communication that we sort of have nowadays, and particularly the rich diet that is doing us in. So let me just see if we can have this. Can we move this forward, Russell? I think we have covered this song already. What about the slides? We have some problems here. Can we bring the geek squad in? Those special people that know all about these things. Oh, this is fine.
Is this yours?
Mm-hmm. I knew it. We had the expert here. Thank you. So I want to talk to you today about life at its best, and I want to initiate a series over the next 4 or 5 afternoons and the mornings too of how to reverse many of our common diseases that do not respond very well to medications or to procedures. We're talking now about chronic diseases. What does it mean to have a chronic disease? Can you give me a definition of chronic?
It means eventually it's going to kill you.
It's going to kill you? Yeah, that means it stays around, right? You can't turn it around, right? So you can do all, you can find the finest physicians in the world. You can find the finest research centers in medical care. When it comes to heart disease, we have no answer for heart disease when we talk about coronary artery disease. Oh, you said, but we can do bypass surgery. That helps, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. How long? 10% of these bypasses, $150,000, close up within 1 week. 40% close up in less than 18 months. When President Clinton had his bypass done, he had the finest team in the world to take care of the president. Quadruple bypass, 6 years later, closed up again. These bypasses could last 20, 30 years, but they only last if you change the behavior that closed them up in the first place and made them necessary. And surgeons are very excellent technicians. They're brilliant in what they do. But then there's nobody there after the surgery has been done. The master thing has been done. There's nobody there that says, from now on, sir, you can no longer smoke, not one cigarette, because otherwise you jeopardize the work that I have just done. And by the way, you need to do something about your exercise. What that means, you have to move into 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes every day in walking to keep those bypasses open. And by the way, when it comes to the dietary thing, it's too late to play around with these kind of things. Most of our patients, they will tell you, we have perverted appetites, perverted by the culture that tells us, eat, drink, and to marry, and tomorrow the doctors will take care of you, and they cannot. Unless you are collaborating with the establishment in medicine. So when you have a bypass, it's absolutely essential that you move from the American diet, which is way out here. And by the way, especially here in West Virginia, I've been to some of the stores and looked at some of the gasoline stations, what they sell there. I begin to understand why you are the number one in many, in the top 10 disease categories that I talked to a public health official the other day about. I can see the connection. The diet is way out here, and then when you begin to look at the diet that we should have to keep those bypasses open, it needs to be all the way here. So if you say, well, I usually like my bacon and eggs, okay, I won't have that many eggs anymore. Instead of having 7 eggs a week, I just have 3 eggs a week. So you move from here to here, you haven't done anything that will really make the difference. I say, well, you know, I love my potato chips and my Pringles and my Oreos and my M&Ms, so I'm going to eat fewer of those. Instead of having them every second day, I only have them now once a week. So you go from here to here. You have to be on here. So this is a very stark message. It's a message that is based on the understanding that our diet has moved so far in this direction that we're totally unaware of it, how far we have moved over here. So now we find ourselves here. We have all these diseases, the heart disease, the diabetes, the hypertension, the obesity, the arthritis, and the depression, all these things, they're all related to what we're doing at this level, and we've got to move on this. And so I want to help you to begin to understand this, and then I don't want you to feel overwhelmed, because I'm a pretty nice guy. I won't tell you you have to move from here to here tomorrow, but you have to do it next week. So we have to begin to think in terms of we have to move. So that's my basic concept today. So fork and knife have today become identified as the weapons of mass destruction, and West Virginia is no exception. It's actually the leader of the pack, right close to Mississippi. So we have some work to do here, right? Now, there was a lady that many years ago made those kind of statements. She said, there are few who realize, as they should, how much their habits of diet have to do with the health, have to do with their character, have to do with their usefulness in this world, and their eternal destiny. These are pretty strong words, aren't they? I mean, what we put at the end of a fork has something to do with our character. Are we weaklings? Once we understand something, do we have the courage to make the change? I mean, it can even have an influence on our destiny. And then the author says, the appetite should ever be in subjection to the moral and intellectual powers. And people say to me, I don't care. I eat what I like. That's all that matters to me. If I have to die, I have to die anyway. I might as well enjoy it. Wrong idea. Because people that say and have those kind of ideas, they usually die very slowly over 20 years. They get their first disease when they're 50, 55, and then the heart disease sets in, the hypertension, the strokes, the cancers and so on. While other people that are taking a different viewpoint and they're willing to say, well, the appetite should ever be in subjection to the moral and intellectual powers. I should make these decisions based on my understanding, based on my intellect, not just on the taste buds, and because I'm going to share with you today that what you understand up here will change the interpretation of your taste. So you won't miss anything. You won't miss the foods that you're willing to die for, literally. Because what is changing up here, the understanding, conditions this one here. Because the interpretation of taste is not on the taste buds, it's up in the brain. It has to do with what we see, with the smell. It's all interpreted up here. So if I perhaps make some suggestions to you and say, maybe you shouldn't have those M&Ms quite so often. You say, I need to have my M&Ms. No, just relax. Just let them go for 3-4 weeks. And you won't miss them that much. Oh, you will hanker once in a while, but then you call your friend and say, I have this hankering. I have my hands in a little bag of M&Ms. What shall I do? And your friend would say, Dr. Deal said, reach into it and take one, embrace it. And then he said, take one and then seal them. And you see, you will see as time progresses, these things will be much, much less important to you. I'll give you an example. I'm doing some teaching for the Chrysler Corporation, and they wanted to reduce the medical costs of their workers. And they know that they cannot compete with Korean and Japanese manufacturers because the American worker uses much, much more of the medical costs that go into the car. So they hired me, and we gave them a 35-hour teaching program, an education program, of how to change the habits, how to change your diet, how to change how we do things, our habits. And then I was at the hotel, and one man sends me a package. He must be an engineer because it's all duct taped. I mean, only people that are engineers are using duct tape to put something around a package. I had a hard time even opening this thing. When I finally opened it, I saw his note, and he said, I challenge you to eat those M&Ms in 95 days, one a day. Because I had talked about the idea that we need to make some changes. And I also told them that I love M&Ms. One a day. I trained myself to do this. I mean, if they're around, I have one a day. If I'm not, I don't even need them. So he sent me this package, and that night, I really enjoyed my M&M. I felt so good. I went to sleep. I felt very satisfied. I didn't miss my wife. I didn't miss my kids. I had my M&M. I'm fine. Next morning, I wake up. I wake up in the morning, and of course, on the bedside table, I have all those M&Ms lined up. So I see my M&Ms are different colors. I said, oh, I have one. And I know it's going to be a good day because I had my fix. So I take my M&M, I enjoy it, I come back home that night, and when I lecture to anybody, I usually invest myself quite a bit. And so when I come home, I have perspired, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I want to take a shower, and I want to go to bed. So I come home, I'm coming home to the hotel, and it's late, it's 10 o'clock, and I see my M&Ms. It's going to be a good evening. And then all of a sudden, I said to myself, didn't I have one this morning? No. I didn't have one this morning. Yes, you did. No, yes, no, yes, no. I always thought I was an intelligent person. So I figured, I mean, I can solve that problem very easily. I can just count them because I knew there were 95 there before. Right? Now, if I had one last night, I did. It's 94, right? I had 94 there to start with. Then it's 93. I had one. And then I had one this. If I had one this morning, then there should only be 93 there, right? So I count all of these M&Ms. And there are only 93 there. That means I had one this morning. I said, no, I counted wrong. So then I divide them into two batches, and I count them, and I count them, then I add them up later on, and it's still 93. I said, no, I must have made a mistake again. So I divided them one more time at quarter, 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 four parts, and then I added them all up. One plus this, plus this, plus this. And it's still 93. I'm depressed. Which means if I'm an intelligent, reasonable person that's wanting to do the right thing, to use his intellect rather than what I want, then I should not dig in and have another one, right? No, I can't bear the thought. And I begin to feel sorry for myself. You know, I mean, I have a beautiful wife. We have two children there, and they're in Loma Linda, 2,000-3,000 kilometers, miles away. Why did I ever take this job? And now I'm suffering here and with depression and everything else. I don't know what to do. I need to... Ever wondered why we eat? And why we fall prey to those kind of seductive forces? I knew it. I felt it. And then, in my despair, I dialed the number of my wife. I said, honey, you need to be my M&M tonight. She says, what is this all about? I said, I don't want to have this M&M. I'm feeling just deprived of your love and of the kids, and the M&M looks so good to me right now. She said, let me be my M&M. You know, there's no one I love more than you, and the kids have already gone to bed, but they'll call you tomorrow morning. You are precious to us. Let me be your M&M. No calories, just goodness. And so I would have my M&M in the morning, every morning. In the evening, I would call my M&M with ears. And it shows you the power that food can have over us. Even me, I'm supposed to know these things, right? I'm supposed to be strong. I'm supposed to have willpower. Why do people eat? There are many reasons. Much of the eating is taking place because of emotional needs. We need a pacifier. Food pacifies us. So, are you getting the idea now that maybe there's a relationship between our emotions and our food choices, the actions that we take? Do you think there could be a relationship between food and disease? Let's take a look at this. Here you see, I'll talk to you about some population studies. In Japan, after World War II, 1948, they could not find coronary artery disease in Japan. They could not find coronary artery disease in Japan. And so they wrote to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and they said, can we purchase coronary arteries from Americans? Because we don't have the disease in Japan. Well, of course, the people have to die first, and then you take the coronary arteries out, and you ship them to Japan. They said, we want to show Japanese medical students at the university here what kills every second American, because we don't have this disease here. They also said, we cannot find diabetes here in Japan. So here's some of the research data. Before 1960, it was impossible to find diabetes in Japanese adults. And then within the next 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, the diabetes rate had increased by 15 times. What happened? What changed in Japan? And by the way, I need to tell you that after 20, 30, 40 years of purchasing these coronary arteries from Johns Hopkins University, they became very self-sufficient. They said, we can make our own coronary artery disease now. We don't need the Americans anymore to sell us these closed arteries. We do it ourselves now. What happened? The Japanese diet changed because the West invaded Japan. Over the next 30, 40, 50 years, the Japanese began to eat more and more like Americans, and they developed also many of these American diseases. I tell you, I just came back from Lithuania a few months ago, which is a small country close to the Soviet Union, close to the Russian border, just south of Finland there, small country. And they used to always be part of Europe, but then after war, the Russians took over, and there was a change in the regime in 1946. The Russians are in. The Russians now take over, And then the Russians get kicked out in 1991. The Russians are gone. The wall is falling down in Berlin, and Lithuania is a free country again. And guess what happened next? The East leaves, the Russians are being kicked out, and the West comes in. What does the West bring in? Democracy. They bring in gender equality. All wonderful things. They bring in religious liberties. That's all good. But they also bring in pornography and Western foods. This is what I saw there. 7 different kinds of wieners. This is what I saw there in the gas station. And the gas station owner said to me as I was pumping gas in Lithuania, he said, "Sir, we're making our money not from the gas. We're selling these American and European foods. So that's how we make our money here." Do you see this? This looks just like what we... That's exactly what I saw at the Exxon gas station. They even have monster drinks there. It's all there. And it all came in very fast, very rapidly. And over the next 25 years, now 65% of all the deaths among women are from coronary artery disease. These diseases emerge within 10, 15, 20 years. Just like in Japan. Remember, I talked to you about diabetes, developed very rapidly, increased by 15 times in 20, 30, 40 years. Then I just came back from Saudi Arabia last year. I was there and I was absolutely shocked. Do you see these people here? They wear burqas. That means you cannot see anything. Everything is covered except you see two eyes. And if you look very closely, they actually kind of make eyes at you once in a while. You're not supposed to do that. But they all stand in line. You don't have to even look for the golden arches. You know it's the golden arches because the lines are long. They're all in queue there, waiting for getting their hamburger and their fixes. And today, look at what happened there. 32%, 35% of the young people are already obese. And when you look at the American adults, please note, about 33% of the Americans are obese. In Arabia, 36% of the adults are obese, particularly women. And I looked around there, I mean, I've never seen so many pregnant men in all my life. And it's estimated that 90% of the Arab women either have diabetes or have pre-diabetes developing the disease over the next 5 years. 90%! And there's no worse disease than diabetes. When you have diabetes, you have the mother of all chronic diseases because it takes your body down one organ at a time, from the top to the eyes to the ears to the heart to the kidneys. The male sex organ takes down your legs, your toes, everything. It's just a matter of time. And we have no answer for these diseases. You can take all the insulin you want. It doesn't save you. You will die with insulin more than ever before. When you have high blood pressure, you will die with the high blood pressure pills in your system. You do not cure these diseases. You can only cure these diseases yourself if you are shifting from here to here. It's only if we can purify our appetites and break out of this perversion that has happened in our culture, especially in the last 30, 40 years. So I want to talk to you today about the role of diet in chronic disease. Fork and knife, weapons of mass destruction. This is America. Every third death is due to heart disease and to strokes. One third of all the deaths. And I want you to understand that this is a disease that was difficult to find 100 years ago in this country. This is a new epidemic. You look at breast cancer. 1960, we used to have 1 out of 20 women developing breast cancer. Now it's 1 in 7. We have the finest medical care system you want to look for, but it doesn't make any difference because when it comes to these cancers, you are more powerful in many, many cases, in many of these kind of cancers, than the procedures and the medications are being offered. You get the idea that you're very powerful? Are you ready to assert some of that power that I'm going to recommending to you? Are you prepared to think about this? Let's take a look at this. Diabetes. You see, 1985, something happened in 1985. You see, this is about 3 to 4%, 5% of all the people, the adults, had diabetes at that time. 1985, all of a sudden, it goes up very, very high. And this is people over 60 years of age. They now had developed 30% of all the adults in America have now diabetes. 30% of people over 65, that's most of you here, either have full-blown diabetes or you're developing it right now over the next 3 years. That's the statistics. It happened all in the last 30 years. We didn't have that much diabetes in this country. And people say, well, my grandfather had diabetes, and my grandmother had diabetes, my father had diabetes, my mother had diabetes, so I must have diabetes too, right? It's in the genes. It takes 300 years to change the genetic pool in a society. This happened in 30 years. This is not a genetic disease. You can change the disease in 3-4 weeks if you're willing to make some very simple changes, and you go from here to here. Do you hear what I said? How many weeks? 4 weeks, and your physicians will have to take you off the insulin gradually and off the medications. 4 weeks, you have a 40, 50, 60, 70% chance to make that happen in less than 4 weeks. You're powerful. Diabetes is not coded in the DNA. I mean, people have this idea, well, it's passed on from one generation to the next. I just picked the wrong parents. No, we didn't just pass on the genes. We also passed on the recipes from one generation to the next. Right? Look, what do you see there? Tell me, what do you see there? We're all blind here. So tell us what you see so that we can all understand what you see on that picture.
Changing American seats.
Well,
1900.
Tell us. How many seats do you see
there?
Three chairs, three seats. And what happens? Over time, from 1900 till?
1970.
What happened to the seats?
They filled up.
They filled up. Okay. Did they fill up a lot? No, not really. No, they basically stayed around 17 and a half inches. But look what happened in 1980. What happened now? All of a sudden, they went from 7 inches to 24 inches. Why do you think that happened? Because they had so much extra lumber here in West Virginia. They said, let's build larger chairs to get rid of all the lumber. We can make a good profit from it. Is that what happened? No? We'll talk about that one of the afternoons. I'll talk to you about obesity. Excess of overweight and how to take care of that. But look, that's what happened. So we have become larger than ever before. Now, how do you gain weight? How is that in Arabia, in Lithuania, in Japan, people are getting larger? How is it that we in our society be getting larger? Did somebody put something into the water? No? Oh, well, let's take a look. So when you are obese, it's more than just being overweight. This is being really large, okay? The chances of being a diabetic is 7 times more likely to happen. When I see a large person, 20, 30, 40 years of age, and I just get a little closer to that person, and they don't know what I'm doing, but I kind of see if I can pick up some sweet breath. That's a typical breath of a diabetic. Because I suspect when a person is this large, they're almost guaranteed to wrestling with diabetes. Either they're developing it or they've already developed it already. So obesity is the cousin obesity and diabetes. They go together. Then please note, when you have high blood pressure to worry about, these people are usually 6 times more likely to develop high blood pressure if they're obese. They have 5 times more likely to have heart disease. They have more arthritis. They have more asthma. They have more cancer of the breast, prostate, colon, and cervix if they are obese. So what's the first lesson today? Do something about if you're overweight, think about what you can do to shed some of the extra weight. And I'll show you in a couple of days how you can eat more food and lose weight. Are you interested in that? How to eat more and lose weight? People always say to me, I've gone to heaven. If this is really true, I mean, I can eat more and I lose weight. Yeah, that's right. I'll show you. But you have to pick the right foods. So what happened 1975, 1980, when we all of a sudden saw the emergence of the larger seats? What happened when we began to see the emergence of diabetes, of cancers and so on? What happened? 1972, we changed our diet in America, and it changed the world because we introduced fast foods into our culture. And you can see there, the fast foods in 1972, we sold $3 billion. Today, it's probably more like $200 billion, and that's just in this country alone. We have 230,000 outlets, and 48% of the food that we eat nowadays is eaten away from home. We no longer eat at home. Many people don't cook anymore on a regular basis. Young people, if they lose their can opener, they're going to starve. If their microwave oven fails them, they'll suffer from malnutrition. So this is the most important slide here that I want to spend some time on. Can you all stand up for a minute? Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. All stand up. And why don't you keep standing, okay? Because sitting too long is kind of dangerous for your health too. So just keep on standing for about 2, 3, 4 minutes and then we can sit down, okay? Now, this is now the diet in a poor Mexican farmer. What does a Mexican farmer eat? Give me one item that they eat. What do Mexicans eat?
Beans.
What else? Corn. What else? Rice. So they eat beans, that's a starch, right? They eat corn, that's a starch. They eat potatoes, that's a starch. They eat brown rice, that's a starch. Are you with me? They have an occasional chicken, but not very often because they're too poor to have those. And so you see now here, this is then the diet. The diet in a poor Mexican family there in Mexico, the green color is almost all starch, and there's a little bit of sugar, there's a little bit of fat, and then there is some protein. There's always enough protein in a diet if people get enough calories to eat. You never have to ever, ever worry about getting enough protein if you get enough calories to eat. Are we clear on this one? This is the second lesson here tonight. The first one was, overweight is not in your best interest, right? Do something about it. Number two is, even if you don't eat animal products, you never, ever have to worry about getting enough protein, because protein is everywhere, except in junk foods. So when you eat corn, you have protein. When you eat potatoes, you have protein. When you drink a glass of orange juice, or you have an orange, that's 1 gram of protein there again. It's not a lot, but it's plenty of what the body needs. Our biggest problem today in America, one of them is that we have an excessive amount of protein, and that actually feeds most of the chronic diseases. So let me show you what happens. So the Mexican farmer, he talks to his wife and he says, you know, the kids are growing up and I want the kids to go to college and they don't have a chance if they stay here in Mexico. And they've heard of Trump, that he doesn't let you in anymore. So they said, I have to go to the big city. So he goes to Mexico City, and he says, my dear wife, I'm going to, please sit down. Thank you very much. I will be going to Mexico City, and I'm going to get retrained. I'm no longer going to be a farmer. I'm going to be a programmer to help doctor deal with his computer. Right? Guess what happens? He comes to Mexico City, and within a few weeks, he no longer eats meals cooked at home, but he eats meals out. He no longer eats slow food, he eats now fast food. He used to eat potatoes, now he eats Pringles. He used to eat corn, now he eats Doritos. He used to drink water, now he drinks soda pop. And some other things too, right? And so he used to eat beans, now he eats burgers. And guess what happened to the man? The diet totally changed. You see, the diet begins now to look more like this and this and this. The sugar content goes up, the yellow band. The fat goes up, the red band. And the blue band up there, the protein goes up because he has no more, much more meat that he consumes. And so in the end, he has a diet like the American diet that you see here, where you see most of it comes from fats and sugar and some protein here. And the starch is now a minority member. The starch that you eat here in America is mostly white flour, right? We don't eat brown rice anymore. We don't eat quinoa anymore. We don't eat barley anymore. It's all pre-processed foods. We no longer eat what we used to call coarse food. Coarse in distinction from refined processed foods, right? And so whenever you have this kind of a dietary change, which is always in response to becoming more affluent, we're spending more and more money here on food. We have more money that we can now invest in eating food. And now we have this kind of a diet composition. Within 5 to 10 years, you will eat like this. And in 5 to 10 years, you will have the American diseases if you didn't have them before. That Mexican farmer, in the next 10, 15, 20 years, will have diabetes, hypertension, and. And he came to the big city because he wanted to help the family. And his dreams are being betrayed because he didn't understand. It tasted so good. There is no one at greater risk in America to have children developing diabetes as adults down the line than Hispanics. Because they come into our country, they had very little. Now they come here, they have all these wonderful tasting foods. And they take it all in, they're trying to make up for lost time, and they have the highest risk for developing diabetes in their children. I've tried to sell my books. My books have been published in 36 languages. The poorest language where we sell is the Spanish language for the Hispanic people, because they don't have learned yet that what they do in this country is actually detrimental to their health, because it just tastes good, they follow their taste buds, and it's dangerous. The taste buds are not a very good evaluator of the value of something that corresponds to your health. So this is a very, very important slide. I'll have that on the final examination, so be sure you remember that, okay? All right, so let's unpack this just a little bit here. We talked about the dramatic shift in the American diet in the last 30, 40 years. It began in 1970, 1975. You see what happened? Sugar consumption. We used to take 2 teaspoons of sugar in 1825. Today it's 30 teaspoons per person. Per day. Do you think you take 30 teaspoons of sugar a day? No. How do you think people can get 30 teaspoons of sugar? How would they do this? Oh, sodas. How much sugar is in a soda? Small can. 10 to 12 teaspoons of sugar. And what you buy water with a little bit of fizz and chemicals and lots of sugar. And you're paying for the kind of a thing that's only harming you. Yeah, and then some people don't buy those small cans anymore, right? They buy the quartz. And once you bring it into the house, what happens? The kids take it, yeah. Yeah, this is what a family of four does, husband, wife, and two children in elementary school. They consume 32 soda pops a week. A banana split, 25 teaspoons of sugar. And then we look at, what are these? Potato chips, right? Now this is just what you have in one tube of Pringles. You know those Pringles? I'm sure they don't have Pringles here in West Virginia, do they? No. When they come from California, send them back, okay? They're dangerous. So you take one tube of Pringles, and do you have any idea how many calories there are in this tube of Pringles? Well, you can read it. 1,120 calories, which is 1/3 of a pound of fat on your body. And you can eat those. I asked my medical students, so how long does it take you to eat one tube of Pringles? They said, 13 minutes, sir. So in 13 minutes, you eat how many calories? We don't know. We don't take nutrition in medical school. We don't know anything about nutrition. But tell us. Yeah, it's about 1,000 calories you eat in how many minutes? In 13 minutes, you're packing on 1/3 of a pound of fat on your hips. Now I said, imagine you have just run out of Pringles, and now you have to really eat potatoes. How many potatoes would you have to eat to get 1,000 calories? I said, we don't know how many calories are in potatoes. Tell us. I said, well, there's about 100 calories in a medium-sized potato. So if you have 1,100 calories, how many potatoes do you need to eat? 10 to 11. So you see, when you eat processed food, you can eat 1,000 calories in 30 minutes. When you buy them as they come in nature, as God designed them, you have to eat 11 potatoes. And I asked the students, how many minutes would it take you to eat 11 potatoes? They said, 11 days. Do you get the idea? God, as a master designer, is in the business of packaging food correctly. You can eat all the potatoes you want. You cannot gain weight regardless of what they tell you. They talk to you about carbohydrates and all these things. Just wipe it all off the slate. It doesn't. It's all salesmanship. I give you the guidelines right now so that you have some idea what I'm going to talk about for the next 4 days. I had this pediatrician come to me, and he said to me, come on, he said, how can I train? How can I teach? How can I educate a mother that comes with her child to me? I have 10 minutes time. That's all the system gives me. I have 10 minutes to see that mother, and in 10 minutes I have to diagnose the child, I have to diagnose the ill, match it with a pill, send them home with a bill. Next one. And you want me to tell and teach the mother about nutrition? Come on. I said, you can do it in 30 seconds. He looked at me, he said, tell me another one. I said, okay. Are you ready? Two principles. Number one, tell the mother, don't buy too often foods that have nutrition labels. What do I mean by that when I talk about nutrition label?
You want food like the potato or the carrot, not the can of Pringles.
Ah, very good. So, this gentleman says, when you buy a potato, there's no nutrition label on a potato. But when you buy a Pringles, the government demands that you put on there how many calories, how much salt, how much sugar, all of these kind of things, because the government knows that these refined products are not in your best interest, and they want to give you a chance to become an informed consumer to making a wise decision, except that no consumer understands these labels. My wife, she bought Pam. You know Pam? You know, and she says, honey, this is really great. How many calories do you have in Pam? How many calories? Zero. Haven't you read the labels? It says, no, you don't. Have you read the labels? Sometimes, yeah, it says right there, zero calories, Pam. And my wife says, this is great. Shh. This is wonderful. I said, honey, have you read what the serving size is? It will tell you how long you can spray it to get zero calories. And she said, no. I said, would you read it for me? She looked at the label. She said, what? A quarter of a second. That's it. Nobody can do this. But you see, if they can give you a serving size that is under 0.5 calories, then they're allowed to write on the label zero calories. And so people don't read the serving size, and they go like my wife, shh. We're being fooled all the time because people don't understand these labels. They were made for a purpose, but nobody seems to really understand it because, again, the industry has manipulated them in such a way that they don't really meet the intent of the law. So, 1,120 calories, these are Pringles, that's 62% fat. When you eat potato chips, that's not a potato, that's fat. When you have these, what do you call those Adventist things, those haystacks? Did I say enough? Did I say enough? You got the idea? Let us eat potatoes. Let us eat the food the way the master designer provided for us. And you say, well, but you know, a potato doesn't really taste all that good. Yeah, I know. So what, when the kids come home from college, when the grandkids come home, we have a baked potato, one of those big ones. And when they come out of the oven, we usually do surgery without a license. We open it up, and then what do we hide inside? Butter and sour cream, cheese. It's all fat, 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 fat. And out of that big potato, which might be 180 calories, you make it into a caloric bomb of 500 calories. They say, no, it's really good. And then you say, I can't eat potatoes because potatoes are fattening. It's not the potato, what you put inside, and we're hiding there. That's what's doing it. He said, well, what can I do? Potatoes kind of flat tasting. Oh, do you ever make some lentil soup? Yeah. Why don't you take yesterday's leftover lentil soup? It always tastes better the second day. And put it over the potato. It's great. Or you can have some, if you're Hispanic oriented, you can put some salsa on there. There are all kinds of things. You just want to make it moist and add some flavor to it a little bit. That's all. But you don't have to use all this butter and sour cream and cheese. And God knows what we hide in these beautiful potatoes. Look at this. A potato only has 3% fat. You can eat all these potatoes, and that's the same number of calories that you had in this one tube of Pringles. And you can be filled up. You're full. You can eat lots of food, lots of potatoes, for instance. You don't have to worry about extra calories. How about this? What is this one? That's a milkshake? That's a big milkshake. That's 2,000 calories. My wife is 5'1". And she exercises pretty much every day in the gym there at Loma Linda. She needs about 1,500 to 1,600 calories to be in good health, to have the energy that she needs, 1,500 to 1,600 calories. Just one milkshake is 2,000. I mean, people come to me, oftentimes I have some women come to me and say, I want to lose some weight. And I ask them, I mean, what do you do? I mean, why do you think you're overweight? I don't know. I mean, I eat like a bird, and I'm gaining all this weight. I said, what kind of bird are you? Are you a sparrow? Are you a vulture? You see, people don't seem to understand. They don't understand that you have a concentrated calorie load. These are calorically dense. You know what I mean by that? Calorically dense, the calories are piling up in a small space, shh, just like a candy bar. You got a small candy bar, 300, 400, 500 calories. Does it fill you up? No. So you have to have another one. Does it fill you up? No. They fill you up with the third one? No. Because you need to fill that pouch. It takes about 4 cups of food. And if you have these calories very piled up there, you have to eat and eat and eat and eat before you finally feel a sense of satiety, sort of a sense of satisfaction. See, this drink has no fiber. It doesn't fill you up. It's just, as you can see from the chart, it's mostly sugar and fat. That's it. Calorie-wise, it's sugar and fat, and the other thing is taste. Yeah, it tastes good. Because we have become used to those kind of things and begin to crave them. We become addicted to these foods. We'll talk about that. How the industry actually addicts people and they don't even know it. We think that, well, I'm just weak-willed. No. It's much more complicated than that. We'll talk about that some other time. So this is what we then eat. About 44% of all the calories that we eat, about half of all the calories that we consume, half of the calories almost that we eat, have no nutritional value. It's mostly sugar and fats and alcohol. We became the first society that was overfed and malnourished. Can you believe it? And it started in the 1970s, 80s. We always thought people are malnourished because they don't get enough calories. We have more calories than anybody else needs, and we're also malnourished because the foods that we eat have no nutritional value. God placed foods within our reach. These foods contain over 100,000 micronutrients. And you say, well, if I don't get my good food that I'm supposed to eat, I just take a few supplements. Folks, that's not the answer. You can take all the supplements you want. In most cases, they probably do more harm than good. Because we need probably many of those 100,000 micronutrients that you find in food. You have an orange. Orange is known for what? It contains what? Vitamin C. So you didn't have time to have your orange, and you didn't have any orange juice in the house, but you have a vitamin pill, vitamin C. Right? So you take the vitamin C tablet, it's fine. It's the same amount, it's exactly the same biochemical structure, the vitamin C that you have in the pill, that you have in your orange juice. So you figure everything's okay. It's not. Because we now understand that there are probably at least 50, maybe more like 100 other micronutrients in that orange that activate the vitamin C in the orange to be really fully accessible to you and giving you optimal value. It doesn't come by taking the vitamin C tablet, even though the biochemical structure is the same, but you have other bio-activating substances in that food that God prepared. Are you with me? You begin to understand? It's much more complicated than we thought, isn't it? And so here's one of the famous nutritionists from Harvard, Dr. Willett. He said, the transition from food to becoming an industrialized product. You see, we don't eat food anymore. We eat products. They've become industrialized. They have become mechanized. They have become processed. They have become engineered. And he said, when you make that shift from food to industrialized product, you're establishing a lot of foundational problems, particularly when it comes to circulation-related diseases like heart disease and so on and so on, that we talk about later on. He said the actual processing of food has stripped it of its nutrition and concentrated its calories with adverse health effects. What am I reading here? What am I saying? Can you translate that for me?
Remember, we processed food, we took everything out of it, was of any value.
Yeah, that's right. But what we're really saying is that when you process food, there's always a danger that you have a significant loss of the original nutrients that were in the original product. And that creates a foundational problem in terms of health. So that was the first shift. We shifted from food to industrialized products, right? So now let me go to the second shift. This is now shifting to animal products. People don't seem to know that most of the fat that we eat is actually very well hidden. So when you go to the kernel and you have some extra Krispy Kreme, most people don't realize that this has 18 pats of butter equivalent in that piece of chicken. The chicken is no longer grown the way it used to be grown. Have you seen how they grow chickens now? 150,000 birds under one roof. They never see the sun. They're dying from ammonia poisoning there. They're taking all kinds of antibiotics and so on and growth enhancers so that within 3, 4, 5 months, you can sell these chickens because they have done their job. As a matter of fact, they talk about the idea that many of these chickens that are raised in these industrialized farms, in these cages, they actually talk about the idea that they gain weight so fast that their femur, their bones, can no longer carry their weight, and they begin to fracture. I mean, what happened to us as being good stewards of creation entrusted to us when we actually cause the fracturing of bones, the killing of birds? It's just one example. Where do you find most of the fat? Most of the fat in the American diet is found in meat, poultry, and fish. That's 35% of all the fat that we eat. Then you have also a lot of fat in salad oils and shortening, and in dairy products. So you can be a vegetarian and you still can have a lot of fat in the diet. And fat is not in your best interest. Fat makes fat. Fat is a concentrated form of calories. Every gram of fat has 9 calories. Every gram of starch has only 4 calories. Okay? So if you want to lose weight, be a little careful with fats. Take a look what happened to the meat consumption in this country here. We've gone from 124 pounds to 200, it's now 221 pounds over the last 100 years. Would you have guessed that the average meat eater in this country devours 12 cows? I mean, I was shocked. I mean, 12 cows, I mean, these massive cadavers, I mean, you eat everything from the lips to the tail, the whole thing, 12 cows. And then on top of that, many people eat another 25 hogs and 2,400 chickens. And then people have told us, well, white meat is okay. It's not, especially the way it's raised today. I would rather have a piece of lean red meat than some of these chickens the way they're raised today. Not that one is better than the other, not that I recommend anyone, but we have to think differently about this. Just to give you some idea, if you have, you know, people always think about, when you talk about meat, what do they think about? Meat has protein, okay? So let's take a look at this. So here, this is an American hot dog. Fat, 85% of a hot dog is? Fat. How much protein? How much? 15. So when you think of a hot dog next time, what are you thinking about? Is it a high fat or is it a high protein food? High fat. Surprise, isn't it? You look at some of these frankfurters, 84% fat. You look at these luncheon meats, 80% fat, 20% protein. You look at salami, 73% fat. 70% protein. Now look at this hot dog here. You know what a hot dog is made from? You don't really want to know. Because everything they cannot sell, they put into that, shove it in there. Is protein. There's no carbohydrate in there. Remember we talked about rice and beans? Remember? And barley and corn, they're all high in starch. And people do very, very well. They've always done very well. For the last 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years, people have always done very well. The Incas in Mexico, they used to live on starchy foods. The people in China for the last 4,000 years have lived on a diet. What do they eat there? Brown rice. It's a high starch food. The Roman Empire was built on wheat. What is that made of? That's starch. And yet today people say, you can't eat starch because starch... Folks, this is all marketing. They're marketing us to death. And every day there's a new idea coming up. You have the all kinds of kind of strange things, and you see it on television all the time, and you think, therefore, it must be right. It's not. This is American meat. You look at a sirloin steak, and 75% of the sirloin steak, the calories, is fat. 25% is protein. And the World Health Organization, a couple of years ago, proclaimed and declared that processed meat as a group is carcinogenic. That means, just like smoking leads to lung cancer in every second person, so it is with these processed meats. Processed meats, the more you eat of those, the more likelihood do you have that you get colon cancer. We have actually mathematical formulas that will spell out the amount of processed meat that you consume and the likelihood that you develop colon cancer at a certain age. This is not any longer some kind of a fanatic that it tries to scare you out of meat eating. No, this is the World Health Organization. It's right there. Processed meat ranks alongside smoking as cancer causes. Just like tobacco causes lung cancer, so processed meats cause colon cancer. And yet we dare pray and ask the Lord to bless this food that I know is going to cause colon cancer. I mean, the World Health Organization, they don't have any axe to grind. They say very clearly that eating animal products such as processed meat, as well as meat in general, is directly related to causing. They don't talk about an association. They say, no, this leads to this. And yet many good Christian people are not aware of this. They eat those corpses. And they thank the Lord for blessing us again with a good steak. We have to rethink some of these issues. I mean, it's very painful when you hear it the first time, isn't it? Because you look in the mirror and, you know, I like to be your friend. I'd like to have you come back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. I want you to come back tomorrow when I talk about how you can reverse these diseases. But we have to look into the mirror first to see that we're really in danger, so that we begin to think of, yeah, how can I make some adjustments? How can I make some changes? Maybe I can't do it all in 1 week. Maybe I can't do it all in 1 month. But I need to be aware of it. Begin to read books. And I have asked the ABC here to bring some special books, some of the best books in America today. They're in that little room there. And I don't know, are there special office hours here for when you make the books available? What time is the store open? I don't know the exact time, but it's in the evening. Oh, it's in the evening? Okay. Folks, you owe it to yourselves to not just listen to my concerns, but to read some of the books that are out there. They're small books. I will give you one of my books also as a special gift the next few days. It's called U-Turn. You can turn around. But there are books out there like How Not to Die. It is what time?
10:30 to 2:30 and 4 to 7.
10:30? Okay. So 10:30 to 11 o'clock before I start speaking. 10:30 to 11 o'clock. And then in the evening, what time?
4 to 7 and then after.
Okay. So it's after my lecture, which closes at 5:30. And I'll be very happy to sign my books, whatever I can do. Okay. You owe it to yourself. You'd be absolutely amazed. There are a long list of scientific references that very clearly show that this is not just some opinion piece by some author who wants to sell a book. No, this is, we're talking about planetary survival. We're talking about ecology. We're talking about climate change. 97% of the scientific community believes that there's climate change that is the result of human activity, and most of it comes from animal husbandry. We need to look into this. Let me close now by pointing out one more thing, and this is sort of a sacred cow for Adventists in particular. We used to eat about 3 to 4 pounds of cheese, and then something happened in 1975, and it shot up to 35 pounds now per person per year. How did that happen? How come we eat 10 times more cheese now than in 1975? What happened in 1975 that all of a sudden we began to get addicted to cheese? What happened in 1975? Fast foods. What do you find cheese in? Cheeseburgers. What do you find cheese? Pizzas. What do you find cheese? Everywhere. One time I had a presentation at a large church, and I was totally unaware at the time. I asked the kids, the children's story, Charles, what's your favorite food? And the kid said, pizza, cheese, and everybody was kind of stunned, but accepted it because it has become part of our DNA, even as church people. There's so much cheese now available, they don't know what to do with all the cheese. They're looking for new recipes every day. Because we have now cows that have special growth hormones in many, many situations, and they produce more milk than we can ever use. As a matter of fact, in 1975, the American population rose up against the dairy industry and said, we do not want to drink whole milk anymore. Why? It has too much fat. What kind of fat? Saturated fat. What does saturated fat do? Saturated fat causes the liver to make extra cholesterol. What does the cholesterol do? Clogs up the arteries to the eyes and to the ears and to the mind, everywhere. Oh, so the people said, we do not want to have any more saturated fat because it has in the milk. Can you reduce the fat content? They said, yes. So they gave us 2% fat milk. Remember that? Some of you? And then people said, no, it still is too much fat. It still is causing cholesterol buildup in the arteries. So I said, okay, we'll give you skim milk. So since then, they've given us blue water. Right? So tell me, what did they do with all the fat that they skimmed off the milk? Hello? Can you imagine this executive? He kind of is used to calling the shots, and he sometimes treats his wife in the same manner. Terrible, actually. And he says to his wife, no more whole milk in my house. I just read the article. Whole milk has saturated fat. Saturated fat causes the liver to make extra cholesterol. Cholesterol gets in my arteries. I'm clogging up. I don't want it. Did you hear me? Yes. No more whole milk. Yes. Skim milk. Yes. This poor woman, you know, she does exactly what the husband demands of her. She brings home skim milk. And then one day she forgets. And by mistake, there is whole milk on the table. The husband is furious. What are you trying to do? You're giving me half and half? Are you with me? The taste buds change. She didn't give him half and half. It was whole milk, but his taste had adjusted. And she said, no, it's not half and half. It's whole milk. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. What are you trying to do, woman? What are you trying to do? You're trying to be a rich widow? You're trying to kill me? Now, give me a cheeseburger. So this is why we want to really delve into the concept of healthful living. Not just one lecture, but we need to do it every day, two times a day for the next few days to get a more complete understanding and not just to make the mistake as this executive that on one hand he was correct when he said, well, I don't really think I should have whole milk anymore. Maybe he should have even opted for some almond milk or rice milk, you know, all these different kinds of milk substitutes now, especially for people that have some allergies to it. He didn't understand. He was right by saying, I don't want this fat anymore. But then he said, give me the cheeseburger. Right? So we want to talk about that tomorrow because cheese now has become the number one source of saturated fat in the American diet. This causes more cholesterol production in the body than anything you can eat because of the amounts that we consume. So we pick it up there tomorrow. Our time is up. I appreciate very much your patience with us and being so attentive here. And I want you to think about that. Talk to each other about this and see what we can perhaps come up with. How can we make some changes? How can we make changes without losing our loved ones who insist, I want this? Right? I mean, we're asking for a major adjustment, and it means you have to be very sensitive when it comes to food. Food is always a very sensitive issue. I want to give you the science, but I'm very, very sensitive in letting you know that I want you to think about it, and I encourage you to begin to move in the right direction. And if you can't do it all at once, it's okay, but begin to think about it. Get some books tomorrow. It's what time? From 10 o'clock till... From 10:30 till 11 o'clock, right? Right? Look for the books, yeah. Okay, thank you so much, and God bless you all. Shall we have a word of prayer? Our Father in heaven, we are realizing that we have slipped into a dangerous cultural lifestyle. It has happened in such a way that we were not even aware of it. We had no idea that we have these huge amounts of fats and sugar and salt in our diets, that most of our calories today, so many of them have no nutritional value, but they're sold to us based on taste. Lord, it's just a rerun of what happened in the garden when Eve looked at that beautiful fruit and she gave in. Help us to understand and give us the strength to live in such a way that we can honor you as the provider of the food for our good health. In Jesus' name, amen.